Hello and welcome to Hustle Over Everything podcast. This is a podcast where we receive stories, tips, and tactics from entrepreneurs who have done it. I'm Alex.
And I'm Ono Sinde.
And today we have a treat for you. Listen, this guy is becoming one of the most prolific people when it comes to food. A food expert. The Keith Lee of Canada. I'm putting sauce on it.
Hey.
And I, see the double entendre? Mm-hmm. Put it. We have.
We heard you, bro. That was nice. Bars.
You feel me?
Yes.
We have Ryan, aka Eat Famous, in the building.
What's up? What's
How you
up?
Doing, bro?
I'm good, man. I'm happy to be here.
You're already in the Christmas attire.
Yeah, I'm getting. You know? It's funny. My guy was saying that I kind of look like some Miami Hurricanes with the green and the orange, but
Canes,
feeling
baby.
Festive.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Christmas tree behind you.
That's it. Y'all knew I was coming.
We all knew you were coming this.
Your
set up.
Trees are set up.
Oh man, that's after Halloween.
Right away.
Immediate.
Yeah.
People can't wait.
That's it. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yo, we're just having a dope conversation and we're going to get into having a conversation around food marketing, building a creative business.
Yeah.
But we just had an interesting conversation about being a stay-at-home dad entrepreneur.
Right.
What's your experience like, man?
Honestly, it's great. I'm having the time of my life. I come from a world previously where I worked for a very large, very popular global brand, a corporate powerhouse. And for a lot of time I saw my life being there, you know, wrapping up 65 Rolex or whatever they give you,
the gold watch.
Yeah, you know, but I was able to transition a couple years ago full-time into the role that I do now, you know, content creation. I have a very cool, sexy, unheard of title, food culturalist. I run an Instagram account called Eat Famous, just over 280,000 followers. So I work with a lot of brands, restaurants on, you know, marketing, content creation. So yeah, it's allowed me to kind of be a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
Full-time entrepreneur, full-time dad. And yeah, I couldn't trade it for
anything
else. Man,
that's the dream, right? I think that's what every man wants, is that you want to be able to be financially secure to be there with your family at the end of the day.
Actually, I credit the birth of my daughter. So I took Pat leave when she was, after my wife had Matt leave. And then I took like 6 months of Pat leave. And I was like, how do I do more of this? Like just spending time with her, because what I do full time now, it had been a side hustle for a number of years. And then it functioned like I felt like I had 2 9-to-5s.
Oh, so when your daughter was born, you're still working corporate.
Just right up there. And then as soon as I got back, I think I lasted at my job a month, maybe. And we're talking like 10 plus years.
Okay.
You know, and then just, and 10 plus years and a big chunk of that amount of time toying with the idea of leaving to like pursue what I do now full time, scared, comfortable, call it whatever.
Yeah.
But as soon as I spent 6 months with my daughter full time, it was clear.
So you have your corporate job for 10 years.
Yeah.
So you're in the same company for 10 years.
Yeah, plus 10 plus.
10 plus years. So when did you start there?
When did I start?
Yeah, I mean the corporate job, like when you were at that job, was it 2013, 2012?
Yeah, it must have been around then.
Yeah.
Global brand, like huge, I guess, say, I worked for Coca-Cola.
You for Coca-Cola?
Yeah, okay. So there's optics that like, it's such a great job. No matter, like, people don't even ask you what you do there.
They're
like, oh, you work there. Yeah. You must be happy. You must be like fulfilled, right? That job meant a lot to me because a lot of great connections and friendships were made there and some learning too. But like, I wasn't being served in terms of like being able to express myself creatively, do the kind of things I wanted to do. I'm there this whole, that time. And then a little into it, you know, I start messing with the Eat Famous thing. And it's moving, and they're getting to a point where money's coming in, and it looks like a very viable option for a career.
Yeah,
like I said, it went from side hustle to like just a second 9-to-5, pretty much. So like income, all of that stuff was happening. It was just needing something to like push me out, you know.
Now, when you were building it, what was your first check?
What was my first check?
Yeah.
Man, so y'all are y'all movie guys at all?
Of course.
Yeah. I love movies.
Goodfellas, you know Goodfellas?
Oh yeah.
Of course.
Okay.
Martin Scorsese.
The
classic.
Best. Right.
Classic.
So man. Hank Hill's, you know, they're the sauce they make in the movie. Mm-hmm. The real Hank Hill has a tomato sauce company. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, he did time, got yeah. out. So there's a tomato sauce. So that was the first check I ever got. But the funniest thing is what sticks out more than my first check is how much money I turned down before ever taking money. So when I was E-Famous started, it was just supposed to be the marketing branding arm of another business venture I was in. Mm-hmm. So I was curating this account, and the first time I got an email saying, hey, we'd love to be able to pay you to post some of our products on your account, I deleted it because I was like, oh, this is a scam or something. Like I thought, because nobody was getting paid for yeah. Content creation back then.
And what year was this?
This has to be 20. No, so this is like 2015, 2014. Like when I'm starting to like get, because I have the account for a while, but then a year and a bit in, I'm starting to get inquiries about like people working with me. But again, the influencer marketing thing wasn't happening like that, at least mm-hmm. not in Canada. Mm-hmm. So I'm going through two things. I'm very skeptical because I'm like, if something doesn't exist, you don't know how to handle it. And then also I was like, oh, I'm not going to sully this beautifully curated account mm-hmm. with ads. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, dummy, you're saying no to money? Mm-hmm. You know, so that had happened 4 or 5 times before thinking like, yo, okay, there's something here. Like, I can make bread off of this. This is crazy. So yeah, that was the very first check. It was something like
how much money were you turning down?
Nothing crazy. Cause I'll tell you how much the very first post I charged $50, $100 for it. So it wasn't that I was turning down big money. It was that I wasn't prepared to understand that like you could make money off of this.
And you don't even know the value. The value is not established. Nothing. There's
no
category, right. Food post, this number of thing. There's nothing to gauge the value of the post is supposed to be.
I'm posting burgers. Like I'm not a Kardashian. Yeah. Like there, at that time, nobody who wasn't a famous person was going to make money off of being themselves on social.
Yeah. And I think they might also know the metrics of what that one post can do. So you said $50. They're like laughing to the bank. They're like, whoa, we just finessed this guy.
Probably. 50. Yeah.
And like, that's like word of mouth marketing. Like, they're just going to come out of it. Okay. E-Famous has co-signed this and I trust him.
Yeah.
So.
And I had a big account at that time. Maybe not as big as it is now, but still at that time, comparatively.
Was it like 80K or like 90?
No. You know what? People were reaching out probably like 20.
20K.
Because again, no one at that time, nobody had it like that. Because I'm early on, you know, so yeah.
That's big.
Yeah.
Now, you start getting these checks.
Yeah.
Well, when do you start to say, all right, I need to think about this as the next career move?
Right. So fairly early. And it has as much to do with the money as it did with like the fun. I'm a creative naturally. Mm-hmm. So I've worked for Coca-Cola. I've worked for a couple other large brands. And although I have a marketing background, I never found myself in marketing at those companies. So I was always doing very, very like linear, repetitive type jobs, very like stuffy, you know, tons of rules, not a lot of room to like for my input or my creativity. So this thing is happening where I'm getting recognized for my creativity. So that already is very intoxicating to me. And money's coming as well, right? But I think when I started, like, cause again, that $50 is laughable back then. But I think when I started to be able to like court brands that I would never have thought that I would work with, cause at first I was working with small brands, mom and pop restaurants, local places. I've worked with McDonald's, Amex, Air Miles, the Raptors, NFL Canada, you know, Hudson's Bay, LCBO. So we're talking about like very large brands. So when they started reaching out and, you know, you start to get to that 4-digit for a post, you know, 5 digits for a campaign type numbers. And you're like, oh, like I'm not rushing to pull out that check from work every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like you start to kind of, your eyes open up, but again.
It's like you're playing with house money at this point.
Yeah. But then again, the space is so new. It was almost like the wild, wild west because there's no frame of reference and people are telling you like, you're going to quit your job for something that might be gone, because like it was seen very much as like a trend, and that like I can't go back 5 years and say, what did Johnny Brown do in this situation? Mm-hmm. Whenever I had to discover something, it was like in real time. So that made it tough to think that there was a future in it. But at a point, it was just, it was getting undeniable.
Mm. That's so interesting, man. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the, all of the times as entrepreneurs, we're in like the messy middle of, all right, I'm working a full time.
Yeah.
And the side hustle becomes a full time.
Yeah.
Right. What was that moment for you where it became equal? Because it becomes relatively easy. I don't know if I'll say relatively easy, but
yeah.
Manageable,
right,
for an Instagram page.
Yeah.
But what was making it become so like heavy lifting,
right,
where it felt like you had 295s?
So a couple of things. I was using, like, I can't say don't fire me Coke because I left, but I basically like my Coke office was, it was functioning as like the Eat Famous office. Like I'm answering emails there. I'm setting up meetings there. I'm editing, you know what I mean? Like I'm paying that, like, because before I used to just be like, okay, I'm gonna go to a food event or go to a shoot, you know, take some time in the evening. But like, I'm having so much work happen that it's seeping into the day, mm-hmm. right? And because I had been at my day job for a while, I don't want to say I had it on autopilot, but I knew what I was doing, so I felt like I could kind of just sneak it in. Mm-hmm. And plus, it was kind of like, see, I almost compared to like dating two people. You never like them both equally. You know what I mean? There might be one that was just there before. Yeah. Maybe they've got a car or more money. There's some more convenience, but there's one that you really like. The Eat Famous like, thing was like the one I was really, really liked. Yeah. So I was letting that take, you know, the bulk of my time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once you see that kind of traction, mm-hmm. that kind of joy you get out of it,
yeah,
just that momentum right. keeps pushing you forward and forward right? Yeah. And like, what was your wife telling you at this point? Because right. you're kind of stuck in between the job.
Yeah.
You're doing Eat Famous. Was mm-hmm. she like, okay, listen, you can really take this Eat Famous page to the next level? Was she more of, let's be cautious a little bit here?
Honestly,
what's her mentality like?
Even on our worst day, the day of our biggest fight, I could never, ever say that she is not the number one person that pushed me towards like my goals. So a little side note is when I left Coke, I actually left it for another opportunity. It was a more creative type role. It was way more in the lane of what I was doing, but it was still working for someone. That didn't last. I think it lasted 6 weeks. Mm. And I come home and I'm letting her know this doesn't seem like it's going to work out. In my head, I'm like, do I have to go back on my knees crawling to Coke? And she was like, yo, you've been doing your thing for years. Like,
double down,
just do this.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, you're good. And she was like, yeah, we're good. And I never looked back since. Mm-hmm. So again, that motivation from spending that time with my daughter, mm-hmm. Her blessing and her encouragement, that support, it was huge because, you know, there's so many people that just literally, they just will only dream in life. And I'm not even shitting on that. Like, I understand the fear that like, it feels like you could have cement shoes sometimes. You can't move because mm-hmm. you don't want to mess up your life. You don't want to mess up your family's life.
Dependence,
you know what I mean?
And everything.
Right. We're so focused on like a number. And then, I mean, full transparency, like the first year of leaving, I did triple what I was making at Coke. So you get that part, again, me saying no to money. You get that part of you that's like, yo, why didn't you bounce 3 years ago? But again, I don't have a DeLorean. I can't go back to the future.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. But I'm a big advocate for pursuing your dreams and pushing through, mm-hmm. but not just in this like beautiful way that everybody makes, oh, let's manifest it, think it, see it, and you know, life doesn't work like that. Like you have to know, self-awareness is huge. Mm-hmm. I should have known that I was so capable of what I'm doing, right? Because I had that self-awareness. A lot of people will have like a goal or a dream, something they want, mm-hmm. but they're not always self-aware enough to know that they can't do that.
What was blocking you initially? Like once, because if you're saying you're aware,
yeah,
and you're doing the job and you've gotten that check and like a four digit, you're like, damn, okay, I know myself, but go hard,
right.
I can make this happen.
What
was blocking you?
A gang of things, man. I'm like my folks are from Barbados, West Indian people. Like I would be on TV
mm-hmm.
and like, I call my mom and be like, hey, it was on TV. Enough, oh, that's good. You didn't quit your job though. Like, you know what I mean? Like that type of because again,
they value security.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And again, Coca-Cola, great company. Big brand, like, man. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, this is me as like, I'm not talking about like living in my parents' house or being under their roof. Like I'm a grown man with a family, taking care of myself for years. Still having that, not fear of like what my parents would say, but like that learning of like, you know what I mean? You don't mess up a solid opportunity, right?
Yeah. It's like they've been indoctrinated to believe that it's school, big job, stick there. Because, you know, opportunities are so scarce back in the day that they don't know that technology has opened up so many doors.
Yeah.
So you can't even blame them.
I don't fault them at all. Yeah. They came here, you know, at a time where to be black and here wasn't easy. To come here and maybe just know a handful of people that you can't even, if you fail, you can't fall back on them because they're building like you, right? It's not like, oh, well, let's go see your uncle who works at the bank. Let's go see your uncle who owns the bank. You know what I mean? Like, so their need for structure and stability is complete. Like I see a lot of people like blaming their parents for not being able to be strong enough to chase their own dreams. So I'm not saying like that kept me there, but I know that was part of my DNA that I had to work through, but I don't hold any malice for that.
Yeah.
Right.
Just comes with the territory.
Of course.
Yeah. So to wrap up this part, how much of the 4-figure checks were you getting consecutively before you quit?
Probably too many. Yeah, man. Like it was really, and this is not like to stunt or flex or anything, but this, I'm hoping someone watches this and like quits a couple years earlier or like spends that extra 2 hours a day, like learning their craft so that they can, you know, level up and control their own destiny sooner. But yeah, like we have to really understand like the role that digital marketing plays, influencer marketing plays today in business is huge. You know what I mean? Like look at like the recent pandemic, like it's bodied businesses. You know what I mean? Like industries that have been around for years thriving had to either change their model, right? Change the way they do things, or they're just on a downturn. And there's still people out here like myself who are in demand. I remember when COVID hit, I mean, there was a part of me because when you work in a space, develop like relationships and with restaurants, especially like that food community is very, very tight. So my prime concern was like, I hope these people are okay. But my immediate second thought was like, who's gonna be able to afford me? Like, who's going to be able to pay me? Are the people that generally pay me even going to be around, right? And I'm not saying like I'm bulletproof, and not that there's not waves, but like it's clearly like a viable option, right? It's something that's here to stay until something else comes. But
yeah.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Your main source of income is from your Instagram page, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I do many things. But all related to that.
What else do you do?
So I do hosting, speaking. I'm the food expert on The Good Stuff with Mary Berg on CTV. So that's a daily lifestyle show. So I'm one of their food experts on there. I guess I could say I have a book deal on the tables. That, Sheesh. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, you can add authors soon to the list. I run social media for a handful of restaurants. Then I'm creating content that either lives on my account or, you know, content that's going to live on the accounts of the brands that I work with, speaking engagements, consulting, you know, so it gives you a whole bunch of pools that you can kind of swim in and draw from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were saying in the podcast last week, Sun Tzu, we're talking about 33 Strategies of War.
Yeah.
Art of War. Art of War, I think. 33 Strategies is Robert Greene. Yeah, but he has this one quote that I love. He's like, opportunities multiply as they're seized.
It's true.
Right? So like you seizing the opportunity, leaving the corporate gig.
Right.
Look at all the multiple opportunities that's created.
Yeah.
Speaking, book.
Yeah.
You probably couldn't even imagine this when you quit that job. Man. Right?
No, not even close.
Yeah.
You're so focused on like, just holding it together that you don't know I'm not just saying like not everyone go quit their job the day after you watch this, but you travel, well, at least pre-pandemic, you know what I mean? If you're traveling anywhere in the city, spending 2 hours almost a day traveling, you're at the job 8 hours, you're probably thinking about the job another couple hours, you get up to 12 hours. that if you have something that you can tangibly say, I can do this, and you're taking 12 hours in the day, like the math speaks for itself. Like mm-hmm. those are things I didn't see that mm-hmm. like it becomes so clear. Cause I was doing so much, like when you say 2 9-to-5s, but like now that amount of time, and it's weird cause I feel like I've never worked harder, but I've never worked less either, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So when I have to work, I'm putting maximum effort. But I mean, there's days I'm playing 2K.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'm a jungle gym for Avery. Like she's crawling on me and mm-hmm. and I don't have that worry of, you know, what are we gonna eat or you know, what's happening next. Right. So it's all about like the financial aspect is huge. And I know it helped for me because the money was coming in. Mm-hmm. Some people who are working at growing, you know, they may not have that cushion or that amount of income to say, okay, well, it justifies making this kind of jump. But again, when you look at that time quotient, when you think about working for someone that you probably don't love working for, and I think that's being generous when I say that, mm-hmm. right? So think about the effort, you know, we're talking before we started filming about innately, we're all pretty selfish. Like, mm-hmm. so if when you're working for yourself, right? Like there's just so much more motivation, there's so much more energy. There's times I had to drag myself into my old job, like mm-hmm. literally drag, or I'd be anxious. You know what I mean? Like Sunday.
After 4 o'clock, yeah, man. The jitters you right. get. Damn.
And I mean, so people say like, okay, are you going to be afraid when you're working for yourself? It all rests on you. Mm-hmm. But I know so many people stressed out at work, unfulfilled, and putting that 10 to 12 hours into something else. That's half the day that you're getting. Right. Plus you're going to try harder naturally, I would assume. So I'm not saying that like everybody can do it. But again, that self-awareness that if you know you're capable, you can't fail.
Mm-hmm. You can't fail. Yeah, man.
Most definitely, man. So you mentioned restaurant marketing. That's one thing I want to dive into.
Yeah.
Because not everybody has KP Lee.
Right.
You know?
Right.
There's a lot of restaurants, especially in Toronto, that are struggling.
Yes.
A lot of business owners, and a lot of Black people that actually want to become restaurant owners.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And shout out Drinks by Nika. She actually just opened up a restaurant in Hamilton.
Okay.
So for the restaurant owners,
yeah,
what are some strategies that they can use to consistently drive net new traffic to their business?
Right. So again, I can't speak for myself. I know that becoming familiar with the landscape of the restaurant world in Toronto and like margins being razor thin, even prior to the pandemic. So like it's even harder now. I know for myself, I almost don't say this, like, but I'm gonna say it anyway. A lot of Black owned restaurants, it would be very, very tough for me to like turn someone away if say the budget isn't there to work with me. Now that's not to say that like if you can afford to pay me that you shouldn't, but like, you know, I almost have like a little bit of a Robin Hood theory. And I mean, that applies to all smaller businesses, to be honest. Like, you know, I've had the good opportunity and good fortune to work with brands. You know what I mean? That it kind of pays for that. Like I've got a media kit, I've got rate cards. There's classes of them based on size, scope, you know, all of these things, right? So I know I can make kind of like allowances to make sure that like I'm giving back to community, mm-hmm. if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think restaurants like reach out, tap into those folks like myself or other people that can become advocates for you. You know, we've seen like, you know, you made the Keith Lee of Up Here reference. I would love that. But like, you can see what like the right kind of advocacy or, you know, cosign from someone can do for your business, right? You've got to also, I think, ahead of it, and I heard someone say this today, a lot of Black restaurants open more out of like, he was referencing the US, out of like, well, okay, my pops can grill or my auntie can really, really bake. So like we could do one thing really, really well. So
we can make this killer mix.
Right. But the business component may not be there. Right. And I mean, we could spend hours talking about, you know, barriers to access and how it's going to be inherently way more difficult for a Black owned or a BIPOC owned restaurant to get its start, to get loans, all these kind of things, to be situated in order to be set up for success. You know, but again, anything that we undertake, it is on us to head into it with as much information and knowledge. So, I mean, a lot of times, like if we're dealing with a restaurant that exists, then of course, yeah, you've got to figure it out based on what is out there. But I think like getting into business, if you're at that stage where you're thinking about opening a spot up, like that, you have to be prepared. You have to be able to do more than one thing well today. Unfortunately, like in a perfect world, restaurant success should equate to two things: incredible food and incredible service. Shouldn't have to have it. By all rights, I shouldn't have to exist, but I do. You know what I mean? It's like, we're not in a perfect world. Because if you did those two things really well, ideally you should be okay, but we know that's not the case. So I think, you know, embracing an attitude of like making sure that you're aware of what's happening, like what's moving the needle. Because the thing is, like, your restaurant's not doing well, or maybe it is, or if say you're in a situation where your restaurant's not doing well, it's not difficult to find out who is doing well, right? Mm-hmm. So figure out what they're doing. Like when I started out and I was like, oh, all these shadows in my pictures or my videos, it doesn't look as good as this person. I'm DMing that person. I'm saying like, yo, what light do you use? Or like, are you shooting in the day? Are you shooting at night? Mm-hmm. Right? We live in a world now where we have access to anyone. I could ask Rihanna out. She may not answer, but I literally can. You know what I mean? Like, I can message anyone. You can get at anyone. The wealth of information is there. So arming yourself with just that that know-how, or that knowing that like most information is out there. Like if you're noticing that there's dips in your business, you know, you can take a course on perfecting your service. You can take a course on like what systems to use. There's so much information.
Yeah. You find out that the more successful people are, let's say like for you being super successful as you are, someone reaching out as they're getting started, you are so willing to give them that information. I don't know what it is with really successful people.
Yeah.
It's just like an attitude of abundance that they have, because they're like, yo, listen, I've been able to do this and I want you to feel what I'm feeling.
Right.
Take the keys to the kingdom and make what you do with it.
And I'm so glad you raised that point. I think it's two-tiered. And it could be a bit of both or one or the other.
Yeah.
Is first off, people love talking about themselves.
Yeah.
This wouldn't exist if people didn't want to talk about themselves. Y'all wouldn't have a podcast if people didn't love being seen as authorities and talking about themselves. So that's one. So I ask anybody, and even myself who's attained a level six, I ask people questions all the time. And then the second part of that, I think, goes back to your point, is there's very few people that make it without help. And if you're aware of that, and I'm highly aware of how much help I needed and consistently need. So it would be insane for me to like turn my back on people. Like if you're
starting
to,
out.
Yeah. If you go to the beginning of Eat Famous, like scroll all the way back there, you wouldn't be able to tell if it was like a cheesesteak or a cheesecake. Like the pictures are all blurry, ugly.
Don't tell me you're using that fried filter. You know that, you know what I'm talking about. It was like you're frying your picture.
Saturation. Saturation. All the way. I asked people, like I paid attention, right? I looked at like who I wanted to be, and I may not have copied them, but I was like, what are they doing?
Yeah, you took little bits and pieces.
You have to. Mm-hmm. You have to. There's nothing that makes me feel better, and not from like an egotistical standpoint, but like when I big someone up, especially someone local, and then they'll be like, yo, all I did was take your style. And I'm like, that's amazing. I'm not even mad at that. Like, I love that. And not on some ego stuff, but it's like, okay, like what I'm doing is working. You know what I mean? And it's
like flattery.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, is it somebody directly copying you or copying you and putting a little bit of their sauce onto it?
They're putting their sauce. But I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't see what I liked. And I know when they say that to me, they're not saying that like they're going shot for shot or restaurant to restaurant, but they're figuring out, okay, like Ryan knows what he's doing when it comes to, I don't know, distance or formatting, whatever, and taking that, right? Because again, if that's someone I'm a fan of, I'm not like seeing a copycat of me. I'm just seeing something dope. So to know that I'm a part of that is incredible.
Mm-hmm. See, that's interesting. We just had this conversation a week ago about copying.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs copying.
Yeah. Okay. Because entrepreneurs lie and copy. You know, it's part of the process,
right?
Lying. And well, for you, actually, I feel like you didn't have to, yeah. You know, because a lot of entrepreneurs to believe that they can create something, you have to lie to themselves a little bit,
right?
You know,
right.
But you feel like you didn't have that because you naturally just grew into it.
Yeah.
Whereas with other people, they might not have that organic growth.
Right.
So like, all
right,
what are other people doing?
Right.
And copy, or not even copy, steal.
Steal it.
You okay, know what yeah. I'm
Swagger jack.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That I don't like. But you can tell the difference, yeah. Right? But those are the people that generally won't be around anyway.
Because they don't have their own vision to
right.
begin with.
Yeah, yeah. They won't be around. But so my I want to say guilt in that is, so I made reference to the fact that like my early content was shit. Mm-hmm. But what I did is like, I understood that like I needed to get eyeballs on my stuff. Mm-hmm. So once a week, what I would do is I would screen grab a photo that looked incredible, right? And I would message the person and say, hey, like, I want to feature you. So I had this thing called Eat Famous Feature Fridays, right? And again, going back to my theory of people love being seen as experts and people love being highlighted, like 99% of the people when I said, oh, can I feature you on my page? I love this image. They would say, yeah. So that's doing two things for me. A, it's creating relationships with the people that are actually good. And even if my photos at the beginning were trash, at least once a week, people have something good to look at. And they may be apt to follow me now, right? Mm-hmm. As that's growing, I'm building relationships. So now I'm able, after I feature you, when I want to say, hey, like, what restaurant was that at? Or what lights are you using? Or what am I doing wrong with this? You're answering me because we're friends now, right? And you know, now people are sending me pictures because they're like, oh, Rye features people. Let me send him a picture. So I'm not even having to mm-hmm. ask now. And then I'm like, okay, let's create a hashtag, Eat Famous. Mm-hmm. And then right in the bio, for a chance to be featured, tag your photos, Eat Famous. So now I'm going through that hashtag and I'm seeing gold. So relationships and my keys to drive myself to figuring out how to create this better content. Today, Eat Famous has 6 million, the hashtag's been used 6 million times on Instagram. On TikTok, I think it's 55 million
wow.
times.
Wow.
Something like that. It's crazy. That was something I started out of understanding. You like this thing, Ryan. You're not great at it, but I like... Why I knew I was good at this is like, I have an eye. I could tell, like if someone brought 10 shirts in here, I could tell y'all which one everybody was gonna pick. So mm-hmm. I might not be able to like make the 10 shirts, but I know which one would look the best or what you should pick.
You're a good scout.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when I was starting to see this food thing kind of hitting on Instagram, I was like, I knew which pictures would get hits. And I was like, I would see other stuff. I'd be like, why would people post that? You know? But I knew I had to figure out my path to getting that, those photos, that like, that content that people would be like, yeah, that, you know? So, that was my roadmap, that the whole hashtag thing and the Feature Fridays.
I think that's genius. And then that's been a consistent trend that we've seen through our entrepreneurship interviews, networking systems.
Yeah.
Like, no matter which niche they're in,
yeah,
having a networking system and not like something they're going to events. It's something that is every Friday or every so often,
yeah.
I'm networking with people. Like they've seen that, like you had the feature podcast that we're doing. We have dinners.
Right.
It's been another one, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the biggest lessons that we can take as entrepreneurs is having a networking system mm-hmm. that we can rely on to consistently bring net new people into our ecosystem.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah. I had one client I was working with, and he used to go to like a high-ranking tennis club.
Okay.
To consistently meet people.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because he knew that the people that could afford his clothes
yeah.
were going to tennis clubs, mm-hmm. you know?
Makes sense.
They're doing golf too.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's huge. But what I found that was genius with you, though, is that because of the hashtag, it started working on its own.
Yeah.
So it's its own system.
Yeah. Like, you know? There's people that use that. Like, if I mean, they probably don't I only got on TikTok like a year ago. So, like, that, like, someone took that someone there. Someone took that,
yeah.
Right? Like, it's beyond me. Like, that hashtag is, and my account is big, but that hashtag is, it's like into the cultural lexicon of social media now.
It just sounds good to
right.
Eat Famous.
Yeah. Well, dude. That's not me. That's my, shout out to my guy, Terry Dyram. That's
he came whole, up with
yeah,
Eat Famous.
Yeah. Like I told you, so at the beginning, Eat Famous was supposed to be a completely different business entity.
Business, yeah.
I have like a marketing background, like I said, through school. And then I used to write for a website called Trend Hunter. So my boy Terry, who came up with the name for a company called Eat Famous, he randomly saw an article I wrote. And he calls me. He's like, "Ryan, you write? I didn't know you wrote." He's like, "I like your communication style." He's like, "I've got this business idea. I would love for you to look at the plan. And if maybe you can help me with marketing and communication." So like, again, it wasn't anything that was like by specific design, right? But to your point, it sounds incredible. Mm-hmm. Even like a lot of times I'm like, man, like people know me, should like the icon or like, you know, the photo be my face, but like that star with the bite out of it is just, it's like too iconic.
It's too legendary as it is, you know? And it sounds that when you say Eat Famous, I'm expecting like a restaurant in a major city.
Right.
With light bulbs all over.
Big sign,
Eat Famous, big portions. I don't know what it is, man, but.
No, it's a great
It just
name.
Has like some flair to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he's a very smart individual.
Yeah.
So not his only stroke of genius, but yeah, that was like.
So you just took the brand and ran with it.
Yeah, like, you know what was happening was that like that Instagram digital, that component, it was doing more. So we were working on an app. We had switched developers a couple times and just things weren't going. So it was like, oh, okay, this part's working. Mm-hmm. Just be fluid, like lean in here, go this way, right? And it's funny with the name because although it's very much a brand and there's still a lot of other plans for it, like people call me Eat Famous, like as a person. So there's that duality. Yeah. So I'll be in a mall somewhere or like at an event, people like, "Yo, Eat Famous, da, 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 da." You know, so it's weird that it's personalized, but it's still, there's still like a very big brand vision for it, you know? So,
yeah. I was going to ask you with, now that you are Eat Famous, as we've said,
right?
How do you going about building your business internally?
Okay.
Do you reach out to restaurants?
Right.
Do you have someone working for you, helping you? Hey, Ryan, this is a good fit.
Right.
I did an analysis.
Yeah.
Do this and that. Like, how do you grow the business now that like you're doing it?
So it's a very interesting thing. So I do have, I guess, help in the bigger kind of Ryan Eat Famous ecosystem. I have an agent, so I have representation. So they pitch for me. You know, brands and companies and partnerships that they feel like would be a fit. Thankfully though, I get a lot of inbound work. So like most of my work are, you know, brands or PR companies reaching out to do work. It does make sense to pitch, especially because if you see a partnership that just you think makes sense or, you know, you want to work with someone, because I've made things work with brands that I didn't necessarily initially see as, you know, a fit or someone I would even consider, and you're able to make it work. But if there's, say, someone that you're a fan of or you already are like, I know exactly how I would market this, then it makes sense. I think early on, because I had the full-time job, a lot of my contemporaries were always actively pitching, especially the people that worked for themselves from early. But for myself, I was getting so much work in and it was sustaining me that pitching is a newer function now that like I have an agent. They field a lot of that work for myself. It's a weird thing as a creative, and I could pose it to both of you as well. There's a tough time with like letting go and even like trust, you know, like having knowing that people will execute the way that you will. Because a lot of times, the thought is like, how is there not an Eat Famous Chicago? How is there not an Eat Famous New York? Why isn't there some kid in LA running around, you know, taking photos at Smorgasbord for you, right? And I know it's because I'm so set in my ways, but growth will never happen unless you have trust, let go, a little bit, you know? I just recently got an assistant. So I have an assistant, and even the stuff like email passwords, I'm like, it felt like I was giving my right arm away. But again, efficiency is going through the roof, right? Like the day gets easier. I can focus on other things. So I think just understanding that like growth will never come without discomfort, letting go, help. You know, I have a young daughter, mm-hmm. and although she physically grows on her own, it's, you know, what she gets from myself and from her mother and her family and her community at large that helps her to grow, right? So obviously growth will not be achieved without help.
Mm-hmm. And what does like content planning look like? Because yeah. you have all these brands you're working with.
Yeah.
And this is for someone who wants to start an IG account promoting maybe a different product, but they're talking about something that involves a lot of partnerships.
Yeah.
Walk us through that framework of, okay, I have 10 brands I'm working with this month or 10 yeah. restaurants.
Right.
What's your plan of attack
right.
when you're looking at your scope of work?
Yeah.
And like systemizing those into action steps to execute and
right.
deliver them when they're supposed to be delivered.
Right. So this is going to sound super basic, mm-hmm. but like something like a content calendar is huge. Mm-hmm. It's, and I know it's going to sound like, you know, we've all been told to like write things down, but you would be amazed at the amount of people that don't plan or strategize. I used to be one of them. You know what I mean? And a lot of times, you know, when you feel like you're doing well, there's no, it's tough to recognize that like you could be doing better. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot, especially if you're looking at your peers or competition, because I'm in a space where like account number wise, like for the area I'm in for food. Yeah. Like there's me and just a handful of accounts that do food. Right.
Yeah.
So you're from, not in a negative way, but you might be like looking down at people. So you assume I'm up here. Why do I have to do better? You can always do better, right? Like Bron could play better. MJ could have played better, right? You could always do better. And I used to be one of those people that like flew by the seat of his pants and like didn't plan, no calendar. And then I would find myself kind of going through my phone and being like, yo, I did this 2 months ago. I was always good with like deadlines, like your deadlines for your corporate stuff. I mean, you can't mess around. You can't miss that. But then most content creators, not every post is sponsored. Not every post is work, right? Most of your posts are things that you're paying for out of pocket, or maybe they're, you know, it's experiences or things that are being done in kind, but you still need them to keep eyeballs on you, to keep traffic going, to serve that the algorithm that's crushing people if you're not posting and creating consistently, right? So organize yourself. That it's, I know it sounds so basic.
From day
you
one.
Probably were hoping for like a way deeper answer, but writing shit down, like that's the biggest way.
Even when you don't have any brands, partners,
it's just as important, because I feel like when you're working with a brand, there's already a part of you that's going to be like, yo, this is a brand. I'm not messing this check up. So you don't really screw around there. Mm-hmm. It's when you go to that mom and pop spot, or maybe you got some great content on like a date night or whatever. Or like I was in St. Lucia 2 months ago, and like I just started posting it now. And people are like, oh, shoot, you're insane. And I'm like, no, like I'm just getting around to it. Part of that is busyness, but like part of it could have also been like lack of organization. Cause like if you don't schedule things out, it just piles up.
Mm-hmm. It's like when you're playing at the Garden, you're like, you're going to bring your A.
Right, right.
But if it's at Charlotte, you're like, ah.
Yeah, and that, right. And the thing is, both wins are wins, but you see consistently, right?
Okay, LA, okay, Jack Nicklaus, Denzel, courtside and everything.
Exactly, you're going to do your thing.
Charlotte,
it's tougher to get up for those ones. But if you go 0 for 20 in Charlotte, right?
Still your minutes still go.
Yeah. Coach, management, they don't care.
They're watching
about what you did at the Garden, right? It's that year of stats, right? Mm-hmm. So all the rest of the stuff is that year. That's all Charlotte, Milwaukee, you know what I'm saying? But it all counts.
Yeah, even in soccer too, there's like, if you play at United, or can you do that at a rainy night at Stoke, Stoke City?
Right. But it all, again.
It's all a game, right? Those 3 points matter.
That's it.
Yeah.
Most definitely. And one thing that matters as well is you subscribing to the channel. So if you haven't already, please hit subscribe. We're trying to get to 1,000 subs. It's very important. Please hit subscribe. Now, one thing I want to ask you is, do you ever get distracted with the amount of platforms that you have to be on? Because that's one thing that I find, you know, you want to grow our YouTube channel, like I just mentioned. And we also, of course, want to grow our IG, our TikTok, but we're realizing that YouTube is our main focus, right? Talk to us about distractions in the content creation game, because I know that can be a real thing.
Oh, it's definitely a real thing. So, and it's funny because most people I know, they use social media as like their, you know, like their time when they want to kind of like disconnect, just zone out, see something funny. Because I work in it, I don't really get to like enjoy Instagram, right? So like when I'm on there, it's usually like I'm working or I'm like looking at what else is going on, but not really enjoying it. So I kind of try to put it to the side. But I mean, you know, you've got TikTok, right? YouTube, and now with shorts, and like shorts being able to like easily, you know, take content from either of those two previous ones that I mentioned and just have them migrate, because like that can do things for you. I don't know if y'all are aware of Fanbase.
Yep, right.
And I mean, they had a brilliant marketing campaign when they were targeting celebs, saying that if you were on Fanbase, you would have made X amount of dollars. So it was like, hey, Cardi B, you would have made blah, blah, blah.
It's the FOMO.
Yeah, right? And I remember I reached out to Isaac and I DM'd him. I was like, yo, I don't have millions of followers, but I have this many. If I was on Fanbase, potentially, how much could I have made? He sent me the number. I wanted to kill myself. And yet, it took me so long to like get on there. You know what I mean? Even with something like, obviously there's context. It's not that you would have made that number necessarily, but based on your audience and their system for paying creators, that's what I could have potentially made. You would think I should be on there the very next day or that day. It still took me a lot of time to say, okay, let me sign up. Let me, you know, start to service it. But again, because there is so much happening. And the space is a weird space because there's so many creatives out there doing really well. But I wonder, like, are they monetizing? It was like people that used to be big on Twitter. Now, sure, you can parlay popularity into other gigs. But I was like, that was the issue with Twitter's highly used, but like, how do you monetize like off of that specifically? Right. So I know a lot of times when we're all thinking about, I've got to be everywhere. Sure. It helps that visibility, but like, does that platform, is it going to best serve you to be there? For myself, IG works the best. My roots are there. The bulk of my following is there. Does it make sense to be other places and have visibility? Of course. Like I could check my phone after this is done and maybe IG's done. Right. And it's like, where do you go from there? Thankfully, I got asked that question very early one of the first podcasts I ever did. They asked me that question. And I remember being like, I don't know what I would do. I would probably jump off of a bridge back then.
What was the question specifically? Like,
it was, hey, OK, you're doing great on Instagram. Yeah. But what if you woke up tomorrow and Instagram didn't exist?
Yeah.
I didn't have an answer at that time. But at that time, again, no show. No book deal, no speaking engagements. It was literally just like, oh, I'm popular and every now and then I get a check for creating content, right? So, but in knowing that like, you know, time is finite, or the time that you can give to something is finite. You've got to strike a balance between having a presence and awareness of all the other platforms, but knowing, does it make sense for you personally to give so much time to each and every one. I know it's a difficult thing to answer because you don't want to feel like you're missing anything. But again, is it really serving you?
So with that, like, are you getting your fans? You got like 280,000 followers, right?
Yeah.
Are you building an email list? Are you building like a source of, okay, this is my data? Because look, you've been doing this 10 years, 280K followers.
Yeah.
IG can get some ideas and like, hey, you kind of disobeyed our guidelines, our community rules.
Yeah.
We're banning you. That's for it. And then you're appealing it. There's like that period where you're not even active.
Yeah.
What are you doing to combat those things that when they come about?
So it's funny. And again, you know, it's the email list thing is something that for years.
Standard.
Yeah. And for years I was like, yeah, I'm gonna get on it. And it wasn't only until very recently that I was like, you really have to, you know, just because, again, like, people know you, right? But to go and go get them. And IG doesn't even have to die for that to be a concern. Mm-hmm. Like, most creators are experiencing like record lows in terms of like
engagement.
Interaction and mm-hmm. engagement right now. Like, you still see people racking up numbers, but they say that most accounts are seeing very, very low engagement as compared to whether it was a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever time. So less people are seeing you anyway, right? So you've got to do whatever you can to maintain those relationships.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, like, even starting like a Substack for you. Yeah. I don't know if, because that would be dope, right? Because you still have your partnerships.
Yeah,
you
have a
followership.
Yeah. Right.
You make the video. So just embed the video on Substack, send it out to your email list.
Yeah.
And you can add a coupon there. Your followers can get access. You can do it geographically based.
Yeah. Right? Actually, I like that. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, do that, man. Because I think you have like a good following.
Right.
The partners are there. I think you've already done all the work. Just push it together.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I will. Appreciate that.
I'm curious. I'm going to be selfish here for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
If you were us and you're like, yo, I need to monetize this brand.
Yeah.
And I want to grow it. What would you do?
What would I do? Man, that's a good question. I would. So, you know, it's funny because I like I said, you know, I've had a lot. I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of like work partnerships come in. I'm recognizing more and more that like I'm not afraid to like go ask now and be in people's faces and let them know why working with me works. And I'm also not like afraid of like an initial no. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's, you know, like come across people and like there's a lot to be said for tact. I feel like I'm a very tactful person, but like, you know, there's people that like they might be perceived as like annoying or obnoxious, or they won't go away until they get what they want. But then at the end of the day, they're the one that's sitting in success. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like with repetition, like we can convince people of anything. Cause there's so many times I've said yes, when I've built up a no in my head, like, you know, when you're preparing to say no, you feel like an ask is coming. So you're like preparing every reason that you're going to say no. And then there's some people that can still bust down your no and they get you. I think it's because they think about every reason that you could have. Because I think a lot of our default setting is like, because we're inherently like kind of afraid of like change or taking on new things. We're mm-hmm. trying to prepare ourselves to say no to things. And the people that win and that eat are just persistent.
Tenacious.
So like, yeah. Like it, and I don't think they're as, maybe even if they're as obnoxious as they may seem, they're not concerned with that. Right. So if the goal is to, you know, whether it's get money or have partnerships or grow, I just think it's that consistent person, because we always like celebrate like work in the background. Like, it'd be like, oh, you know, this person, another basketball analogy, I guess, like this person lost a game. So they were, you know, shooting in the gym till 2 a.m. Right. Like, so that I feel like that's the same as like consistently asking for what you want. Like, my jumper didn't go down, so I'm going to shoot till my arms hurt. I would like, if you all ever had any meetings, conversations, opportunities that you really wanted that didn't go your way, I would just hope, or I would advise that, like, go at them again. If you really feel like they made sense, or that the person missed out by not doing what you presented mm-hmm. them with, I would go back and make them see, figure out what made them say no. Because again, like, it's clear y'all have what it takes. Like, I'm not really into like downing other people or other things, but like comparatively, whether it's been pods I've been on or just things I consume, like, y'all have it, right? So the reasons, a lot of, and when people have it and they're not exactly where they want to be, a lot of times it's because like, who you feel like you need that next okay from is like they've built up no's. Because I know I do that. Like, and it's, I don't know why, but like I'm always kind of like thinking about, okay, in case I have to, you know, break someone's spirit or say no or save some money. I'm thinking about always like every reason I can like say no. And then I've tried, when I'm on the other side of it, when I'm pitching or when I'm preparing to ask, I'm not only trying to perfect it. I'm trying to think about like, what won't they like? What don't they think is a fit? Like why, what reason could they have not to be like, yes? Because I know I'm worthy of a yes. Yeah. So I think that's a big thing for me. It's like a big mindset thing.
No, I agree. The mindset is everything. So even when we do sales for our other business, Upper Studios,
right?
When I'm reaching out to a prospect and I'm like, my thing is, if I'm going to pick up the phone and dial them,
right?
I don't dial from a place of fear, believe it or not.
Good.
I don't dial from a place of rejection. I'm like, I have what you need.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm super excited to give you this ring because I have something that could potentially change the outcome of the way you present yourself on social. So when I get on the phone with them, I'm super enthusiastic because I'm like, I'm bursting from the seams because I'm thinking, I'm so excited just to tell you what we do and to show you the proof and like what we've done with other people that I can see this looking good for you. And they sense that enthusiasm. They can see, they can, it's as if they can see me smiling from the phone, right? So that belief and that mindset of knowing that you have what it, you have the right offer for them.
Yeah.
It removes every single fear you could have. And with that mindset, you can just do anything.
No, I agree.
So 500 outreaches.
Yeah.
I'm super excited because I know when they reach out, they're going to be ecstatic to talk to me because I'm ecstatic to talk to them.
And creating that mood for someone, that's, I think also like people that win, like they lead, and that's leadership. Like you're leading them to the emotion you want them to have, right? Like everyone I know that's gotten like what they want has been so persistent, unapologetic. And I know these sound like cliches, but I am the biggest fan of cliches because if you're telling me something's been said for 100 years, for 1,000 years, that's staying power. There's a reason why an adage, why words, why philosophy can last long. It's because it works, because it's true. So a lot of times it's not like the easy answer, or I'm not trying to give y'all, you know, what I truly think or that I don't know, but it's literally those things. I've observed a lot of people that do well. And when you can strike that balance between like unapologetically going for what you want and self-belief, you know, like you look at like a Kanye, you know what I mean? Like look at people that like the rep that say like, you know, rest in peace, like a Kobe had, right? Like, I remember I remember reading an article with, it was like a GQ article, and they were talking to like Kobe and then also teammates. And they asked Kobe, like, who's probably like your best friend on the team? I think he said like, it was like Derek Harper or sorry, Derek Fisher. It was Fish. And then they, And then they asked Fish, they asked Fisher, they were like, oh, so Kobe said you're his best friend on the team. So what Kobe's house look like? And he's like, I've never been in his house. Right. So like, again, you're saying like, this guy's my best friend on the team, but he's never been to my house because his concern was winning. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, yeah, you're rubbing people the wrong way. Sure. If you want to be loved and liked, that's a great goal. Like but if you want to, you know what I mean? But if you want to win, if you want to eat more, that's also a great goal. And you have the choice is yours.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm. You know, you realize too, man, is like every single thing that you want, you kind of already know the answer.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we have built this culture of always seeking.
Right.
Going to this conference, going to this event, going to these things. Okay, that one juicy piece of information is going to help me get to the top.
Right.
Right. So you just recite these like platitudes from different people you've heard in hopes that, hey, I've seen Joe Rogan did this. I've seen da 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 da. But internally, you know, the simple things actually is what is actually going to get you. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do those emails. You know, you got to do this. You know, you got to reach out. You know, you got to post. You know, you've got to. You know the answer, so don't overcomplicate it. But we built a culture of overcomplicating everything.
It's true.
And it's become a $1 billion industry, you know? That's how we can charge coaching.
Right.
It's like, I'm giving you the information, you know.
Right.
Right. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And people are not awake to see that either.
Right. There's creators in my space that like some of the corniest people or some of the worst content, but they show up. They're everywhere. They know everybody's name. They ask and ask and maybe they're getting the yes because someone's just tired of them. And like, get up, fine. You know, that might be. But like, you see who wants it in life. Like, talent, ability, charm, all these things are great. They help smooth it like when you're in, right? But like, nothing but determination.
Yeah,
they're
A-plus players.
Yeah.
But with a B-plus product.
Right. Yeah, but you see it all the time.
Yeah.
You see it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Love that. This works towards wrapping up, man. Last question. If you had $500, this is just a fun random question. $500 and you had to build up your business from scratch.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Wow. Okay, so I have $500 mm-hmm. and I've got to build a business from scratch.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
I would pay... $500 scratch. I feel like I have that answer. I feel like I would. Can you? I was gonna say I would just buy a phone, but I don't think you can buy a phone for $500.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah,
yeah. And just get on a plan. And
a little Android.
Yeah,
like you can get a 2013 Samsung.
Shots fired at Samsung.
Oh man.
Hey, I was gonna say okay. So or Huawei. Do they still have those in Canada?
No, I think
you can get a Google Pixel for like $200.
Yeah,
like a good Google Pixel for like $200, $250.
So I'm gonna buy a Google Pixel, mm-hmm. and I'm going. So that's $200. So I've got $300 left, and I'm going to pay a bunch of kids to build the next Eat Famous, because the secret is that like, although I'm good at what I do. It's not that difficult. You know what I mean? It's really not that difficult in terms of like the day to day, because you get yourself a phone, right? You get yourself a phone, have a little bit of a food budget, right? And they have access to me, mm-hmm. right? I can teach them how to, because relationships is a big part of like my growth and success. Yeah, I would build the next Eat Famous. With a phone
from scratch
and a hungry kid.
That'd be exhilarating, starting from scratch again.
I would love to watch like the growth of Eat Famous from outside of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because like I said again, it didn't exist like nothing like it existed when I started. It wasn't even the form of it wasn't even the same. Mm-hmm. Right? So yeah.
Yeah, man.
Love that. With that being said, they're off the show. Let's toast, yeah. We're gonna toast in a second.
Yeah.
Also what you can't control. So control your grind. Control your life. I'm Alex.
And I'm Ono Sinde.
Oh, I'm Ryan Hinkson, aka Eat Famous.
Let's Eat go. Famous, baby.
Shout out to the Rise. Toast it up, fellas.
Yes, sir.
Toast it up, man.
Mm-hmm. Cheers.
Wow. I appreciate y'all.
Appreciate you too, bro.
Have a good one. Shout out Isaac in the back. Shout out my guy in the back.
What are we? Isaac.